I am Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots, and you're listening to the Bob Culture Podcast. Roll out!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bob Culture Podcast, episode 44. I am joined by a man who's making a huge mark, a ton of huge milestones this year on the local music scene, the man, the myth, the legend, the one and only, ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Mahoney. Bobby, what's
up, bro?
You.
Thank you very much for having me. That's a wonderful intro.
Thank you. I could have done better, man. You've been crushing it this year. I'm finally just glad we got to sit down and talk, man.
Of course. Yeah, no, this is great. A good, strong name for the podcast, you know, the Bobcast. You know, I appreciate that.
Yeah, so we got a bunch of Bobs in here, right? Yeah, I think this is the first time I've had, like, another Bob on the Bob Culture Podcast.
Every time I see it, I'm sharing something of ours or whatever, I'm like, Bob's got to stick together.
Hey, man. We're about the local music scene here. And, of course, Bobby Mahoney from Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son. Like I said, you guys have been crushing it. I remember a few years ago, I guess it was, with Vection, we were playing the acoustic set over at Monmouth University, and we met you for the first time, and you were right after us. We still have that lighter, by the way, with the bottle opener on it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool. So we appreciate it. Kate uses that all the time. I was going to bust it out and throw it on the table. I got to find it, but we use it all the time, so thanks, man.
I'm glad. No, that's awesome. It's nice when people can find practical uses for our silly things.
Yeah, no, it was cool. No, it's like two in one right there. It's awesome. Yeah. And then, you know, we stuck around, you know, we were watching you play and just like a lot of passion from you, just like playing acoustically and stuff like that, you know, just doing an acoustic set, rocking out. I know you did one this morning, right?
Yeah,
over at Sunsets.
I love doing the acoustic stuff. It's fun because you get to be a little quieter, a little bit more personal, while also not being really any quieter.
I like to keep rocking
out a bit more and, you know, because everyone's seen the quiet acoustic singer-songwriter, and there's times for that, absolutely, you know. But a lot of times when you're trying to, you know, make a mark or something, like a quick thing like the radio thing, it's like, okay, you got to kind of use the full band energy with just the acoustic guitar.
I love that you said that, man. And that's something I noticed about you right away. I'm like, he's going for it, you know, and it's good.
Absolutely, you know, you got to make do with what you can do. This morning I had Andrew playing acoustic with us, with me, which was great, you know, and having the duo, which we don't do that very often. But,
nice.
Yeah, whether it's solo acoustic or duo or full band, you kind of got to bring the energy either way.
Awesome, man. Yeah, really cool, man. But it was awesome seeing you in Monmouth University. I've seen you a couple times since then. And things are blowing up for you, man. Really good. So I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
But I got to ask, you know, right out the gate, I always ask the bands this, you know, the band origin. Did a meteor hit the earth? And Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son, which is an awesome name. We got to get into that, too. Was there a toxic waste spill? And then the band was formed. What happened, man? How did this happen?
Very close to that. No, it was almost no. I was a sophomore at East Brunswick High School, and I'd been playing in bands and like starting to write songs, everything like that, and was doing a lot of like solo acoustic stuff as well. But I met a couple friends, Drew Aggie and John Alba, which were the people I started the band Seventh Son with back in early 2011. Like I was a sophomore in high school, they were seniors. And we just kind of started jamming with our mutual love of AC/DC and, you know, White Stripes and just, you know, rock and roll, really. So from there, we just kind of started writing, and then we added bass player, and we started playing shows at Seventh Son. And we would play and they all graduated high school then, so we would play during the summers and the winter breaks when they were home from college. But then when they were away for a while, I was just doing solo acoustic stuff and, you know, just trying to get my name in Asbury that way. And then, you know, they'd come home and we'd play and stuff like that. But it was really kind of a part-time thing. And then in, like, 2014, we kind of rebranded as Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son.
Okay.
Got a permanent drummer, you know, kind of a new lineup and kind of a – that's when we put out our first record, Friends in Low Places.
Okay.
And that was kind of the – reset button, kind of the reboot.
Yeah, hey man, I hear the same thing from all the bands, you know.
Yeah,
so those darn drummers, you gotta find the right one, right?
Absolutely. And we had Drew first, and Drew was wonderful, and then we've had James for 4 years, and James is my brother.
Right.
So.
Oh, okay, cool.
Not actually.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say.
Not actually. At this point, you might think that. You know, but
I get you, man.
It's definitely he's great. He's awesome. And then Andrew's been in the band for almost 3 years now, and we've had a lot of different bass players and a lot of different guitar players. We've had a I always say bass is like our defense against the dark arts position because every year we have another one almost. But no, it's you know, we have a guy named John Chang Soon. He's playing bass for us. He went to Monmouth and has played with a bunch of bands, and he's a sound guy too. And he's been with us since January, and he's been kicking ass. So it's been good, but it's kind of been a process of kind of finding the right people, and not even the right people, but like having different. Like the band was a 5-piece at one point,
right?
And even then, like at that time, it needed to be a 5-piece, and like we had a great time with that lineup, you know. But then, you know, people do other things. People move away. Like our first guitar player, John Alba, who I started the band with, he is now a sportscaster in Maine. Sports guy for the ABC affiliate in Bangor, actually.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's all. Yeah.
So
yeah.
And he and I, I'll go up there and play with him, and you know, and it's great. And so it's cool to have had different iterations of the band, and like we all still get along and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
no, yeah, that's cool.
It's cool, and it's like where we're at right now was we're a 4-piece, and it's clicking really well. I'm happy.
Yeah,
and like
I'll say.
Been a good year, like you said, it's been a good year. We've been very productive and just trying to keep building momentum and keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, man, putting in the work, man. And I see you doing that, man. You know, you got some big shows coming up. We'll talk about that in a little bit, man.
Sweet.
Yeah, you're crushing it. And you know what I was saying, you know, I married my singer just so she can't get a new drummer, you know. So just putting that out there if you ever need any advice, you know.
If James starts coming on to me, I'll know what
saying.
The deal, what he's trying to do.
Yeah. You mentioned AC/DC, White Stripes and stuff like that. I always like to ask people their influences. I hear almost like, you know, obviously a big Jersey rock and roll, like you said. Mm-hmm. I hear a little bit of maybe like a little bit of a punk rock in there, maybe like Get Up Kids or something like that. Mm-hmm. Man, what kind of stuff were you into or inspires this kind of music?
Like you said, AC/DC was like this always is sort of like a rock and roll foundation, and then also definitely punk influences. Like
okay.
But also like, you know, Springsteen is God to me. So like there's the Jersey-ness, you know, Springsteen and Bon Jovi were huge.
East Street right down the road, man.
Absolutely. That was honestly the first time I drove by the sculpture since it's been up, actually. And I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was Bruce's, you know, really my hero. But then like from there, like there's like, a lot of punk bands like Gaslight Anthem and the Menzingers and Against Me.
Nice,
and
nice.
Even Green Day. Like I love Green Day. And like, you know.
Me too, man. Yeah.
It's, you know, really is a whole bunch of stuff. Even like. Older like rock, like the older rock and roll stuff, and newer punk stuff, and folk stuff, and even some country even. Or I've been even listening to Kendrick and stuff like that too. Like
cool.
I try to listen to as much music as I can.
That's good.
And
that's
just try
that's
to,
way to do
take
it.
What I can from it. And I think ultimately it comes down to catchy songs. I like good songs, you know. And like I'll listen to something like, oh wow, like that's a really great song. It doesn't matter really who, you know, what style it is, because if it's something that could be. If it's a good song, you could play it on just chords and, you know, with it on acoustic guitar and vocals, and it still gets the point across.
Yeah, totally.
And I think, you know, some of the best people at doing that are people like Springsteen and Tom Petty and, like, you know, the older classic rock, you know, Dylan, you know. Those were amazing songs. But then also, like, there's still amazing songs being written now. And like, especially in rock, you have to look a little harder to find it nowadays.
Yeah.
I think there's so much music out there, and it's like you have to cut through the bullshit.
Yeah,
but there's still really great rock and punk music being written. You just have to kind of dig a little deeper, maybe.
Yeah, no, really well. I 100% agree with that. Really well, really well said, man. I always hate asking, like, I'm always interested to hear the influences, but I feel like, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, you guys sound like this, and people are like, no, you know.
No,
you know?
But
I think we're on the same page.
We kind of wear our heart on our sleeves in that,
You
know, it's like, I have to, for me, if it's going to be fun for me, I have to write and play the songs that I'd want to hear.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and like, I like, you know, I love Foo Fighters. I love,
oh, dude.
I'm seeing them in Camden in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Later, I can't wait.
Awesome, man.
But yeah, stuff like that. Like, it's good rock and roll songs. There's energy, you know, like, I like, to me, you have to be a bit of a performer, too. Like, I hate it when going to shows and I'm bored.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There has to be, you have to be performing, you know, because like, you have to, the song is, you know, about half of it, and then there has to be the performance of the song, and that's half of it.
Yeah, so. You're putting on a show. Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
And I've seen a lot of your, you know, live videos. You put out quite a few of those lately, man, and you definitely have the crowd, man. I was with one of my buddies, actually. We're hanging out at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he saw you at Prudential, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Oh, cool.
But he's like, they were really good, man.
That's
so
awesome.
That's great.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was nuts. But
we'll tell you.
Yeah, but it's real, yeah. It's the show. Regardless if we're playing in a basement in New Brunswick to, you know, 50 kids, or if we're playing, you know, something like House of Independence or the Stone Pony,
mm-hmm.
or we're playing to 17,000 moms, you know.
Yeah,
You know, whatever it is, you know, you have to bring it. When I was younger, people really told me, there's actually a guitar player, Matt Hogan, who plays guitar for Willie Nile. He plays guitar for Tommy London. He plays, used to actually play for Miley Cyrus when she was just starting with Hannah Montana.
Right. No way.
But he told me when I was young, he's like, you got to play every show like you're playing the Garden. And yeah. I've really always kind of took that to heart. So whether, you know, like we are playing in, if we're playing in a basement or playing, you know, a bigger room, it's like, got to give the same show. Or today, acoustic at Sunset.
That's what I was just going to say.
You got to do the same thing.
Something I noticed about you immediately, even at Monmouth University, man. You were, I mean, you know, it's like you were playing Madison Square Garden, man. You know, that's, I love seeing musicians like that, man. I love seeing musicians that give 110% every time. And I love a lot of people that like play, like no one's watching sometimes. Like, not to say that they're, you know, oblivious, but just like they're just in the moment.
Yeah, you have to do that. And I agree. And like growing up, my parents brought me to a lot of concerts, and I was very fortunate to see so many of my heroes growing up. And yeah, there's really is like an unspoken sort of magical element when seeing a show, and like some people can really make that moment happen, you know, and make that connection. And you make, as a songwriter, if you can make the audience feel like you're really experiencing what's happening in the song for the first time, or like really get into it, like you say, really
like
people appreciate that. And it doesn't, people can tell when you're going through the motions, and people can tell when you're
totally,
you know, you see someone who's been on the road for 18 months or however long, and you can see that they're just done with it. It's draining after a while. I mean, I can't even imagine what that must be like, but you got to try to kind of dig and find whatever that fire kind of bring that out every time. And it comes out easier than others. You know, there's times you have to really, got to really get in the moment there. But I've been lucky, and, you know, I just get excited about playing, you know. So
passion's there, man.
So, you know, it's, I don't have to try too hard to get worked up to play.
That's awesome. What was your first concert, by the way?
First real rock concert was probably Bon Jovi at the Giants Stadium.
Such a good first concert.
2005. It was Nickelback opened, Nickelback, and then Bon Jovi played, and it poured, and it was so much. Like, it was really hot. It was a hot summer day.
Yeah.
And then when Bon Jovi came on, it just opened up and it poured. And then they had to cut the show early actually because of lightning and thunder, but. Yeah, that was my first real rock and roll experience.
It's a pretty good one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, from seeing them to Springsteen, The Stones, Paul McCartney, Clapton,
that is like epic.
My parents always saw it as like rock and roll education, you know. And it's
that's
like,
really cool.
You got to be cultured, you know. And my parents always were always big fans of music growing up.
That's really cool.
So, like I said, I'm very lucky that I got to see so many of, you know, amazing artists, you know. And then also I grew up going to like smaller shows, like people like Willie Nile and Jesse Malin, you know, those type of guys. And they're amazing too. And like really just watching those guys and learning, you know, growing up and being guitar teching for those guys.
Oh,
and,
really?
I skipped my last week of senior year of high school to go on the road with Willie Nile.
No way.
As like their guitar tech and opening act. So I got to go out and do like Pittsburgh and Ann Arbor and Cleveland for the first time. And I would play my 20 minutes acoustic and then tune guitars, you know, and then help load the van and, you know, drive the next day. But it was great. You know, it's kind of like a rock and roll baptism.
Dude, I was just going to say, this is a great story so far, man. Just the checklist of artists you've seen. Like, I got a list of people that I still want to see. Like, we're about to go see Joan Jett
in July. Nice, yeah.
No, never seen her.
She's incredible. Yeah. She's a legend. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, absolutely. But, yeah, man, you're just like Paul McCartney. You're rattling off names. That's a great way to start it, man.
No, I mean, I love rock music, and I love going to concerts. You know, that was always a big thing growing up. And I think at this point for me, it's like I would love to be able to – I love giving that experience back to people.
Yeah.
And giving them – because I think performing rock and roll music is somewhat of a dying art. In some ways it absolutely is not, because there's so many great artists who are sort of doing it and reinventing it, and it's cool, but it's not what it used to be.
I know exactly what you're saying, man.
And not to be like, you know, the old man yelling at the cloud but – And there's definitely ways that it could be updated and in more 2018 for sure. But like at the end of the day, I think, you know, nothing like just plugging an electric guitar in and just going crazy.
Absolutely.
And I think there's an honesty to it that people can appreciate. And yeah, you know, again, like I said, I think it comes down to good songs with energy.
Yeah, man. Really, really well said. This is a great story so far, man. Well, thanks again for coming over.
Of course.
This is good stuff, man.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the music a little bit. Let's keep it about the music.
Yeah.
We'll listen to a track in just a minute, man. But I want to ask you guys just about, you know, a lot of original music, obviously. Writing the songs, man. Does it start with you and a piece of paper? Do you guys jump in a room? Is it different, you know?
It changes, but usually it'll start with me with the paper. Whether it's or me writing stuff on my phone, like a phone memo, or singing something in my phone while I'm driving,
cool.
Or you know, rushing out of the shower to sing a melody idea into my phone real quick.
Oh wow,
stuff like that. But then you know, then I'll kind of get like a skeleton of the song together with myself and the acoustic guitar, or just you know, or electric guitar, or whatever. And then I'll kind of bring it to the band and I'll say, okay, here's my thoughts for the arrangement, but you know, maybe the drums will come in here and the bass will come in here and the guitar can do something like this, but then they all kind of come up with their parts and we'll jam through it and figure out the song kind of together.
Yeah
Sometimes I'll have more of a structure than others. Like sometimes I'll say, here's how the song's gonna go, here are the parts, and we'll kind of start from there. Other times we'll be like, I don't know how this is gonna really work exactly, and we'll kind of have like the melody or the chorus or something like that. And it's fun to figure it out that way. I don't usually do stuff like writing in the studio. I know people do that.
Okay, yeah.
I'd love to do that, but it's just financially not a feasible thing right now.
Yeah, so, no, hey, I understand,
it's,
man.
It's
yeah.
expensive, so it's like I like to have everything really locked down and figured out before we get in there. And then, obviously, then things will change in the studio as we're going. But really, the songs kind of get done before that. And I'll even get to a point where I'll write out, like, almost like a script for the song, like the arrangement, like, okay, intro, what instruments are playing here, and then, you know, the verse. I'll write out, like, a blueprint for it for myself so I can see it written out. Because I don't, like, for our music, I don't do notation or anything like that.
Yeah,
or,
I got you.
You know, I do that stuff with work and whatnot, but it's not something I do for this. You know,
yeah.
It's rock and roll. It's chords and, you know, leads and stuff like that, and we figure it out together by ear and whatnot. But it's a lot of fun, and we did this new record we recorded at North End Recording in Clifton.
In Clifton, okay.
With it's right down the street from Dingbats.
Yep,
actually.
Sure. Yep.
But we recorded with a cousin Frank Mara, who he plays bass for one of Brian Fallon's solo projects.
Okay, I was gonna say the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, but he's also they call him cousin Frank because he's the cousin of Alex from Gaslight.
Oh, okay.
So we actually got to record with like all of Gaslight's old amps and stuff like that.
Nice,
and, like,
dude.
Yeah, so that and that's an influences. I mean, Gaslight Anthem's another one that
awesome.
We absolutely love them. So that was very cool to record with their amps and like you know get that vibe. But yeah, it was a really cool process. This time we did took like 3 days and tracked it at the studio and you know stayed near the studio and we're kind of immersed in it for those days and then we went back and mixed it and mastered it at a Lake House in Asbury.
Yep sure, we know Lake House.
Yeah, that's so, yeah, we did the mastering there and Tim Pinella did a great job with that of Haunt Club fame. Yeah, and we put it out in March and we've just been kind of pushing it since.
Awesome, man. That's cool. And, you know, I always envy you, like, front people and singers, you know. Not because I wish I could sing, but, you know, I like where I am on the drums in the back. That's fine. That's my office right there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm comfortable at home. But the thing I envy is just, like, you know, like you said, you jump out of the shower, you have an idea, or if you guys have a dream, or you're driving in the car, and you know, you write something down, these melodies come in your head. That's something I've just never had, man, and I wish I did, you know, I think that's such a cool thing.
It's definitely honing a craft, and it takes time, and you could definitely do it. I have faith in you. You could definitely do it. If I can figure it out, you could do it.
No, thanks,
but it takes, it's like, I've been writing songs, throwing up quotation, Dr. Evil quotation
yes.
marks. Since I was like 10, since I was even playing guitar.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was trying and I got failing miserably, but like trying to do something, you know. So, but, and I think it was Jesse Mallon who said something. It was like, you have to write 100 songs, and the first 100 are going to be terrible. And then the second 100 you write, there might be one or two that are okay. And then the 98 that are horrible. And then the next 100, he gets, you know, maybe there's five, you know. And it's a work in progress, and it definitely takes a lot of time of just doing it and being bad at it.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
for
yeah.
every passable, decent song I've written, there's at least 20 horrible pieces of shit that no one will ever hear. And it definitely is a process, and, like, Even though sometimes I'll write a song knowing that, okay, I'm never going to use this, but I have to kind of get this out of the way as sort of like a process and get to the next thing almost, you know, and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to write this one, but then I'm going to take maybe an idea I had in this verse and rewrite that for this next song, or, you know, use a progression that, this is a good idea, I'm going to change the key and use it in this instead, you know, instead of that, or... I don't have like a one direct way of here's how I write a song from A to B. It just kind of sort of happens over time. And
awesome.
Another example would be the song. There's a couple of songs where like, we were working like on the road, especially a lot this record. Like the song Passenger Seats, we were coming up driving home from a gig in Richmond, and we were driving all night, you know, from Richmond to home. It was like the last night of like a 10-day tour. And we were just exhausted, but coming up the turnpike at 5 or 6 in the morning, as you know, as the sun was rising, and I was like, oh, that's cool. So like I started writing some lyrics on my phone while we were coming back, and that ended up becoming a song, and then we hatched out while we were in a hotel room outside of Pittsburgh. Now we were in the hotel room like working on the arrangement, and then we ended up recording it, and then ended up playing it opening for Bon Jovi. Yeah, so like in a year it was just like that was probably the most interesting sort of like progression of a song, because it was really like took it from nothing from on the road to working on it on the road to really being our first record of us like working on the road and while writing these songs.
And this is the track Empty Passenger Seat?
Yeah.
That's the one. You know what? I was going to start with the other one, but you just let that. No, this is good, man.
I thought I was like, you let it in so
perfectly, man. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it.
You know what? We'll talk about music in a little bit. The story was so good, man. Let's listen to it now, man.
Okay, there you go.
Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son, Empty Passenger Seat, right here on the Bob Culture Podcast.
Burning world on your mind, you suffocate the flame and suppress the light.
All right, everybody, that was Empty Passenger Seats. Make sure I get that right this time. By Bobby Mahoney. Awesome, man. Awesome track. Everything sounds really good. You told us about the recording process. I always like to ask bands this. Some people say that, you know, that they could get their writing style from like dreams or sci-fi or fantasy. I'll ask you that just because of the band name and stuff like that. But a lot of bands obviously write from real life and real life experience. Where does the writing come from?
It's definitely like a mix of real life, you know, everything from things in my own personal life or my friends or things that I've experienced amongst my peer group, or things, you know, more real life or more like political, like the political climate, you know. I try not to be too bold-faced, you know, this is a political song, but I try to write sort of with the times in mind, and, you know, I think, you know, a lot of the best songs are a reflection of the times they were written in.
Punk
and
rock,
and it's like, I don't necessarily want, you know, I don't think me writing another Fuck You Trump song is really gonna, you know, do anything, but writing sort of was just with, you know, the climate in mind, you know, general, you know, if, you know, so that type of stuff as well, that has an impact, you know, everything from that type of stuff to, you know, a phrase someone I'll see written on a bathroom stall, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
I'll write, you know, if I see something like, oh, that's okay, that's cool, that could be weird to put in a lyric, so I'll write that down. Or even if, like, in conversation, if I'm, like, sit with a group of people or even one-on-one, someone will say, like, a turn a phrase or, you know, use an expression that I may not be familiar with. Like, oh, that's kind of I could see that in a song. Or even the way people, like, an inflection, the way someone says a phrase, even. Like, because, you know, that's really what it comes down to. It's, like, syllables and, like, the way words sound together. So I'll even, when I get a melody idea, sometimes I won't even have actual words. It could be more just, like, phonetics. And I hear it, and I'm like, okay, what words sort of match that?
Cool.
Sound, you know, it's something like that. So, like, yeah, I'm constantly writing stuff down, you know.
It's a constant process, man. That's like, you're, you know, constantly taking in information.
Yeah, and it's like, it's sometimes too much. But
that's
it's
good,
like, but it's like,
you're a true artist, man. I know you types. Yeah, that's good though, man.
Yeah, and it's fun. And I get, I try to, when I am taking notes when people are talking, I try not to look like I'm taking notes while people are talking.
Yeah.
So I'll be like, you know, okay, I know, write a little something down.
That's super interesting. No, that's really cool, man. The attention to detail, I like that. You know, I can tell that, you know, you're thinking about things, and you know, maybe that's what I'm missing, you know, if I ever try to write a song or something like that.
Because it's the best songs, I think, are ones that people can relate to. It's like, really, you know, it's that's people could find themselves or something in their situation in the song. And it's, not that you want to make it like super generic that anyone can relate to it, but I think if you can make it something that maybe something that people have thought of a million times without, but they haven't thought of it this way, you know, from this angle. Like, people like Warren Zevon, in particular, is an amazing writer who was able to sort of put this, like, a dark humor twist on everything.
Oh, cool. Uh-huh.
And it's really hard to describe, but, like, something like that where it's just sort of like a, like, take, like, that desk, for example. Like, you know, like, it's a desk. You know, we've seen this desk from this angle, you know, but someone hasn't looked at it from a certain angle, you know, and they can,
I
saw it like that, you know. It's little things like that, and I think can help put interesting things together in a song.
Interesting, man. That's a really good answer. That's a very unique answer. I haven't gotten that one yet, man. Mm-hmm. Really, it's interesting seeing where all the different singers come from, man.
Absolutely.
That was great.
That's even like trying to teach songwriting.
Oh, that's right. You teach,
But it's a joke. Because it's like, oh, you know, the teaching songwriting part is, I mean, in that it's such a subjective thing.
Right,
and
right.
Like,
even
in college, like, if I took, like, songwriting lessons or classes, it's like they'd bring in, like, different songwriters to talk about their process. And that's awesome. That's really the best way to do it, because you can listen to someone talk and be like, oh, that's a really interesting approach to it. I never thought of that that way. I'm going to try that, or try that method when I write next time, see what happens. But the other times it'd be like, oh, I completely disagree with that. That's a horseshit, you know, way to write a song. You know, it's, you know, and it's like, okay, I know now that I don't want to do that. So I also learned something, but it's like, okay, now I know, like, oh, I've learned that that's full of shit and I like my way better, you know? But teaching it, I'm always like, you know, here's what most people would do. Here's the rule. But then here's 10 examples where the rule was broken and it's great, you know? So, like, there's so many. It's so subjective, you know, songwriting. But at the same time, though, a good song's a good song.
Yeah.
So, like, it's such a bizarre lightning in a bottle thing songwriting. It's weird.
That's good stuff, man. It's super interesting. I got to ask this. Any like weird or pre-show rituals or anything that you guys do? I know people do some things.
On the way to, we're traveling together like in the band. If we're out of state, usually we take my SUV with a trailer.
Nice.
So,
yep.
So it's tight in there. But usually what we'll do is Andrew, our guitar player, loves to... I guess it was a ritual that he's been doing for years. But before every show, he loves to listen to Motorhead.
Yeah, cool.
So
awesome.
Before every show, we we get 10, 15 minutes out from the venue. We crank up... usually it's like Ace of Spades.
It's got to be.
We Are the Road Crew and Louie are usually the three Motorhead.
Nice.
You know? And,
that's epic.
That's the trend. That... I don't know. I'm trying to get too superstitious or like set in a way of like I need to do this before a show.
Yeah.
Because every show is so different and chaotic that it's like a lot of times I don't get to do anything I plan to do. Like even like
vocal
warm ups,
yeah.
I try to do them as much as I can, you know, because I don't want to blow my voice out and it still happens sometimes. But like having to sing 10 days in a row is a lot.
Right.
But even like some shows, like it just like it's too crazy. Like there's too much other stuff happening. And I was like, oh, I didn't get to do that. So I try not to get too much in my head like that, because I used to play ice hockey, and being hockey players are very superstitious, and there's always like, you know, I got to put my right skate on before the right skate. If I won the last game, I can't wash my socks that I put all over my shin guards. You know, I can't, you know, I got to do this. Then I'd listen to a specific song before each game or like whatever, stuff like that. I used to listen to like either Thunderstruck or Born to Run, depending on the game.
Good choices, but, man.
But it was like, and if I didn't get to do something, I'd feel weird getting on the ice. Like, oh, I didn't do this, but then I know it was all in my head. So for shows, I try not to do like anything too like I need to do this or I'm not, you know, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know? But
the Motorhead thing's pretty on point though. That's a pretty
cool.
Good way to do it.
Like,
that's a nice memory for you guys.
Yeah, just to pull up to, you know, the venue. Yes,
that's awesome, man. Well, speaking about shows and stuff, man, I mean, you crushed it. You know, I've seen you in the Asbury scene. You know, this is, like you said, Asbury's like your music home.
Yeah.
You know, playing all these local venues. You got a big show real quick. Let's talk about this now, man. You got a big show coming up, what, in a couple days, right?
Yeah, Thursday.
The summer kickoff party.
House of Independence.
House.
Yeah.
You know, I've still never been there yet, but we're going to try to get out there, man.
Yeah.
For sure. But tell us about the show. Go ahead.
It's a great room. I was actually just there last night for Willie Nile. It's an awesome room. It's like right on Cookman Avenue. It's got gorgeous lights and sound, and it's a great addition to the Asbury music scene, because there's so many amazing legendary venues there already, but it's different, and it's cool, and I like that it's, again, it's keeping Asbury. They've done great rock shows, so it's sort of keeping the Asbury vibe while sort of updating it a bit more and doing their own thing, rather than, you know, taking over a beloved venue and, you know, turning it into something else.
I see. But, you know, should we get into that? Or
no. But you know what
I'm
saying? No, it's
I
like
know
it's,
exactly what
it's
you're
doing
saying.
The hip, cool thing while doing their own independence.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, and so I like the room. It's cool. And, the staff is always very cool. And we're playing there Thursday with the Burns, which is another great local Asbury band, and Mac. She's a pop rock artist in Asbury. And then we have Tula Vera coming down from North Jersey. Great, like, punk outfit from up there.
Oh, cool.
And then a special guest acoustics, doing a short acoustic set, is Tommy London.
Okay.
With Matt Hogan. And Tommy London is singer. He's a singer from New York. He used to be the front man for Dirty Pearls.
Okay.
But he's opened for Lady Gaga a bunch of times. They're really good friends with her, actually. And he just opened for at Citi Field last time she was here.
Wow.
And, a couple of years ago, I was guitar teching for the Dirty Pearls at Gramercy Theater. And she actually showed up and sang with them.
How
so
cool
we got
is
to
that?
Hang out with her. And,
that's
yeah,
awesome.
That was insane. But
yeah, I bet, man.
It's very cool. But Tommy is an awesome guy. And he's like that rock and roll embodiment. And so he's going to play an acoustic set before us, too. So it's going to be a cool show. But it's going to hopefully be not too late, because people got to work Friday.
I was going to say, what time doors are it? 7?
Doors are going to be at 7. Music's going to start at 7:30, and the openers are going to play. And then we'll hit probably sometime around 9:30. 10 o'clock, it'd be done by 11. You know, get it.
Bed
by 11:30 is my goal.
There you go. Yeah. I get you, man.
No, but,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so we're, you know, we're talking about all these great shows, and obviously, you know, June 14th, go check out Bobby. You know, it's good. It sounds like an awesome lineup.
Man. Thank you.
You've gone from playing, you know, the Pony. I've seen you have some, even some headlining shows, some big shows at the Pony going on. So obviously, you had this big gig at the Prudential Center that led to another gig at Madison Square Garden, and of course, you got to open for you know, Jersey hero, you know, Jersey favorite Bon Jovi, man.
Absolutely.
How did this happen, man? I have a few ideas. I remember some things on social media some time ago, but how did this all play out, man? This is a dream come true, man.
Well, it's like a lot of the first that people have been asking is like, oh, was it a contest or something like that? No, it wasn't.
Oh, it wasn't, because I do remember there was that. That's where I was thinking. I remember that thing you had to submit some video or something.
Yeah, we did that a couple of years ago, but we didn't get picked. Okay. So I was like, okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, we didn't either. Yeah, but go ahead. Yeah.
I was like, all right, fuck you guys. Fine. You know, no, whatever. No. But yeah, I was like, all right, fine. You don't want us to open it, whatever. But no, we tried that, and then I was actually in, I think it was like the last tour or something like that.
Yeah, right, okay.
But, and then, so this year I was actually in, I was in Epcot with my family. I was in
Disney.
So,
I love Disney.
Me too. It's I love it. And so it was like, I was like in a Disney commercial almost. It was weird.
Yeah.
So we're in Mexico, having lunch in Mexico.
Yep, I understand.
And I got an email saying, call me ASAP. So they're okay. So I call this guy and he's like, who is this? And I'm like, Bobby, you know? It's very, you know, music industry type conversation.
Yeah,
funny.
Yeah.
And I was, and he was like, what are you doing Sunday? And I'm like, well, I'm supposed to play a benefit at William Patterson, my alma mater. But it's like a small, you know, small thing. And I was like, I'm supposed to do this, but what's up? And he's like, oh, okay. I had a gig for you, but, you know, if you're busy. And I was like, oh, like, what's the gig? And he's like, you really want to know? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, dragging it out, yeah.
And he's like, oh, we need someone open for Bon Jovi on Sunday. And I'm like, well, we're there. I was like, well, yes.
Yeah, you don't.
And he's like, well, what about William? I'm like, yeah, fuck them. I was like, they'll find another band. Like, they'll get something else. And they were, William Patterson was so gracious. And like, yes, please do it. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was like,
you don't hesitate. You just say yes, man. Yeah.
Yeah, and we got the call on Monday, and it happened Sunday. So like, it was like,
yeah,
that
time to get the practice. Uh-huh. Yep.
Well, not it was. I flew back on the Friday.
Wow.
And the band rehearsed without me.
That's cool, though.
Which was good.
They
Andrew took
that
over, took musical director.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they rehearsed, and then we got back.
That's a good
And then
good
I
band.
Played the, yeah,
that's a good
they're
band
dedicated.
To do that,
they're
yeah.
dedicated. They, and then we did, I did punk, the Trenton Punk Rock Flea Market acoustic during the day on Saturday. Then we drove down to D.C. and played American University on Saturday, opening for Amine, the rapper.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that song Caroline, that it's actually a good song. And then we drove straight back, and then we played Prudential Center on the Sunday.
Awesome,
and,
man.
Yeah, so coming from Disney to getting to do that, like, it was, yeah, it was an insane week.
That's pretty cool. Hey,
still pinching myself.
By the way, it's Prudential Center. You said you played ice hockey. Devils fan or?
A Rangers fan, though.
Oh, okay. So it would have been better for you if it was, you
know. I
know.
It's like, my dad was a diehard Rangers fan from the 70s, like, growing up. So when we got word of the Prudential Center, I was like, sorry, Dad.
But
when we got the call to play with William's Honor at the Garden.
That's legendary.
I called him first, and I was like, hey, so guess where I'm playing next. But, and that was pretty much the same thing. It was like, call me ASAP. And I'm like, what's up? And like, we need an acoustic guitar player for, you know, this gig at the Garden. I'm like, okay.
Sign me up.
Yes,
yeah,
please.
Man.
And they're William's Honor. They're a great country rock band, actually, from Asbury Park. And they play in Nashville. They kind of split their time. And whenever they do full band stuff, they call me to play guitar in their band. And, yeah, I'm very, very, very happy they did. Because, growing up a Rangers fan, playing the Garden was like, you know.
Yeah, dude.
That's, you know, the dream.
Yeah.
And then, but Prudential Center was a blast, and doing it with our band, I had an amazing time doing that. And like Prudential Center, our set got held back a bit in time wise, so we didn't go on until after 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
so the place was pretty full.
That's
which
awesome.
I didn't know what to expect, because beforehand I'm like, you know, guys, we could walk out there could be 1,000 people who don't give a shit about us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you don't know what to expect.
Yeah,
but we walked out and there was like 17,000 people, like, and they were right into it.
Yeah.
I was as shocked as anybody.
What was it like walking out onto that stage, man?
It was amazing. It was, like, in some ways, it was everything I thought it would be. And it was like, you know, holy shit. Like, this is this. And I still, like, am pitching myself constantly. But in other ways, it was like every other gig.
It's going to work.
You sound check, you play your songs, you do the same thing. I would, you know, play them the same way you'd be playing them in a basement to 100 kids. You know, it's kind of the same. It's the same thing, but it's also in its own complete league. Yeah, it's completely insane. And
the sound was probably like on point.
I would have been fine just sound checking. Like after sound check, we were like, okay, we can go home. Just hearing the kick.
Yeah.
Kick, you know, and you know.
That's amazing.
Snare drum sounds like a cannon, and like. That itself, like getting the sound check in a room like that, and with all that equipment and everything, like that's. Would have been good enough, but to actually get to play the gig was you know,
that's epic.
Know. Yeah, epic. And another, I'm still.
Well, apparently went well because everyone you know that I know that went to that show, everything I've seen on social media, the videos and stuff I've seen, everyone said you guys were great and you crushed it.
Well, that's I appreciate that, and that's you know the goal, and that's I'm glad people enjoyed it, and it's in New Jersey. Going to a Bon Jovi show, it's a sizable demographic.
Yep.
You throw a rock and you know someone, you know, you'll find someone you know. You know, so it's like I'm glad that we as a local Jersey band were able to play with our local Jersey heroes. You know, it was very humbling and it was an honor. You know,
that's
it was
awesome.
Very cool. And I hope we can play an arena again soon because that was a little bit of a rush that I need to get again.
So you got to meet, obviously, Bon Jovi. Took a few minutes to talk to you guys.
Yeah, which is very nice. We got a couple minutes with him, and he was very, very kind, and, you know,
That's classy.
It was very cool, and we got to talk about just, like, his growing up. His idols were Springsteen and Southside Johnny and stuff like that. So talking about Bruce and Johnny with John all on a first-name basis was
crazy,
a little mind-fucky.
Yeah.
That was a little weird. That was weird. I think probably the weirdest conversation I've ever witnessed, though, was a couple of years ago. It was at Light of Day, the benefits they do for Parkinson's research. And I'm in the backstage area, and I'm watching Bon Jovi's keyboard player, Dave Bryan, talk neighbor shit with Springsteen. They're still talking like, oh, yeah, your dog, I guess their neighbor's like, oh, your dog was in my yard last week. I go, like, shit, got through the fence. Like, and I'm just standing there going, what the fuck is going on? I'm just like, you guys are the biggest music people in the world, and you're having this conversation about nothing. And I'm just like, 18 and losing my shit. And it's like, you know, stuff like that is
that's
it's
funny,
mind-boggling.
That's crazy, man. What a great experience for you. And just, you know, when you're listing all those bands that you saw growing up, man, it just came full circle, man. That's ridiculous.
And that's and that's really the poeticness of it. Is that I can't remember if I said it to you yet or not, but the first song I ever sang in front of anybody in the fifth grade talent show was Wanted Dead or Alive.
No way.
Yeah,
no, you didn't say that. That's awesome.
And that was like, you know, and for some reason that song really, you know, made me want to try performing.
Yeah.
And I did, and it was fucking horrible. It was really bad.
It was really
bad. And I sang it to a cassette. Because like the song is like a 5-minute long song, and the talent show wouldn't allow a 5-minute song. So I had to sit there with my cassette and record a version down off the CD to like get it to.
Yep.
It was 2004, 2005, and I'm 10, so I didn't have like I'd sit there and do it on the cassette, and I get down to 2.5 minutes or whatever. And it was really bad. I couldn't play guitar at that time yet, so I just sang it.
Oh, okay.
It was just it was before I could play the guitar, but you know, I wanted to perform, and so.
What a great story, though, man.
Yeah, and to get to go from that to playing with opening for them was. Very full circle, and
It's crazy, man.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal. You know, it's definitely. I think I have a lot of local bands on the show. You know, we play with a lot of local bands. We play in a local band. I think it's just good to see like some of our friends and a lot of local acts that we know, man. Like make it happen. You know, like you're playing Prudential Center, you're playing Madison Square Garden. Like you put in the work, man,
and it's
paying off. You know,
appreciate that. And talk about Jersey. You know, the local scene around here. It's insane the amount of. Talented bands there. Actually, you know, one of them. You know.
Oh yeah, there it is. Yeah. Shameless plug. Thanks,
of course,
man.
Yeah. Check them out on Facebook. The plant is. What did they say? The Saints soon.
We got a show with the Saint with Rope Tree and all them. But go ahead, man. We're gonna talk about the scene. Go ahead.
No, but it's amazing. There's something in the water here in Jersey, and it's like so many great bands, and it really pushes you to be better, and it forces you to be on your game. You know, and it's. You know, there's a lot of, it's friendly, it's competitive, but it's, I wouldn't even say it's friendly competition. It's like, it's just, I don't know, it's a great scene. It's awesome to be to go out on any night of the week and go see someone play music, and it's going to be good, you know. There's a lot of great artists, and, you know, definitely something in the water in Jersey.
Yeah, man. It's awesome. And, you know, I always like to, and everyone's so, like, positive when I have them on and talk about the scene and stuff like that, which is good because, you know, I've heard people in the past say it's oversaturated. You know, there's too many bands. But
yeah, I mean, and you can make that argument, but I think regardless of how many there are, the good ones or the better ones always kind of will rise to the top.
Yeah, man. As we've seen, always,
and you could see that. And there's, you know, I think it's a good thing that there's a lot of bands. And I think it's an accessible thing for people, and it's a great way to express yourself, even if people aren't like trying to do it, you know, seriously, you know, or, you know, to a real serious point. But I think being out playing music is great, and I think we shouldn't be like, oh, you know, there's too many people.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like there's a lot of people playing music. There's a lot of great bands to go see. You got to work a little harder.
Yeah, yeah, hey, man, really, really well said, man. Even here on the podcast, you know, we're trying to support the scene, man. You know, we want to keep this rock thing going, you know. Here's always the tricky question I always have to ask all the bands, man. You know, some people like to keep it politically correct. Some people kind of want to, you know, I don't want anyone to lay into anyone or anything like that. But what do you think about, you know, obviously, like, in terms of the scene and selling tickets, promoters paying to play, stuff like that? Do you have any thoughts on that? Or if you want to go the other way, like, any advice to bands or anything like that? I know it's always a tricky question.
It is tricky. It's, there's definitely, like, pay-to-play sucks, but there are definitely scenarios where you're selling tickets where it's not pay-to-play.
Right.
And I think there's a difference between, I've had promoters that, I'll tell you what I think is wrong. How about that? I'll start with that.
Yeah,
what I think is wrong is when a venue will say, okay, you need to sell this many tickets, but you need to put down a deposit of this much money for these tickets, and then you can earn that back. That I've never done, and that I've always said no to, because that's bullshit. But that being said, a venue saying, here's a bunch of tickets, move as many as you can to get paid, I think that's fair.
Right.
I think, you know, a lot of these venues, like, they're giving you a shot. It's not, this isn't a basement. It's not anyone else's job to get, you know, people in there to come see you play. You know, obviously there are different scenarios where you're opening for someone, there's a crowd there.
Exactly,
and stuff like that.
Right.
But,
yep,
like,
yep.
If you're playing a show, you got to promote and bring people. And, like, the way people wouldn't sell tickets or promote if there was no, oh, you have to sell these tickets. You know, if people didn't do that, people would have no incentive to actually push the show, and then people would just show up and expect a crowd. And so that, I think, I don't have an issue with promoters asking people to sell tickets.
Right.
And if you can't move the amount of tickets they want you to move, then don't take the show. You know?
Easy math, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and if, like, then don't screw the promoter and say, I can sell 80 tickets and then only sell 15. Don't lie. You know, that's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, be on level and say, hey, I don't think I can do 80, but maybe I could do 40. And a lot of times, they'll, if you're honest with them, they'll work with you, you know? And selling tickets, you know, when I was younger, was, like, the bane of my existence. And I...
Yeah,
you
know, yeah, we know that story.
Yeah,
yep,
it
yep,
sucks.
Yep.
But, like, but at the same time, I don't think... It's a business, you know, they have to make money, and obviously they make money from the bar and stuff like that, but I think you have to learn how to promote and get people in the room, you know, and as much as I think there should be opportunities for young bands to not have to sell tickets and should be able to play, and I think there is space for that, but
right.
I don't think places like the Stone Pony is a place for that. I think if you want to play the pony, you have to
put up or
shut up, you know, kind of thing, you know. But there are venues where they definitely abuse the pay-to-play system. And I'm not going to mention names.
Yeah, smart move.
But there was definitely a couple, and I know we could sit here and name a bunch. But then there are places then, like places like the Pony, where it's like, okay, you got to sell tickets.
Right.
But I think as long as you don't try to pull a fast one or don't promote or don't sell tickets,
hold
I think
up
you're
your
fine.
End of the bargain, yeah.
Yeah, and I've had shows like for like the Pony where, you know, when I was younger, where I thought more people would come out and people didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an off night. It sucks, but you apologize, you own up to it, and then you do better next time.
Yeah.
You know? And even like House of Independence, like it's a big room for us. Like we're trying to, I'm making a push to get people in there. Like, you know, I'm like saying, like, hey, please come. It's
a big
room. Yeah,
sounds like a great show, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. But like, if I, like, Here's a perfect example. We had a band play with us last time at House of Independence. I'm not going to mention who, but they didn't bring anybody. And they were, as they told me, they were going to be bringing, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40. Which again, and I'm not a
Zero isn't 20 or 40. Yeah.
If they said, hey, you know, we were only able to get 5 or 10, you know, people backed out last minute. There's always the couple people that back out last minute. Hey, I have to, you know, wash my cat, or I have to tie my shoe. I can't make it to your show tonight. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
and it happens. That's fine. But to have no one come out and to not push it, to me, that shows you that they didn't try.
Yeah.
And there isn't, you know, effort there. And that's when, and that's why I wasn't the one to say, oh, you have to sell this many tickets or you can't play. But then it's like some scenarios like that. It's like, well, I wish I had asked someone who was actually going to move the tickets.
Right. So you've seen it pretty much from all the angles.
Yeah, and I've been on the other side of it where the promoters, I've been on the band side of it with dealing with the promoter who was like, oh, you know, a couple of tickets short here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well,
Yeah, that awkward situation.
But
like,
and you deal with it, but I think it's all part of it. But then I love, you know, the DIY playing in a basement. Like, I love that side of it, too.
Yeah, man, me too.
But it's, I think you have to find a balance between the two, you know, because you have to realize that, okay, if I want to play a place with a stage and a sound system and a staff, they have to make money to pay the staff. It's a give and a take. You know?
Give and a take. That's like perfect. You covered that from all angles.
I tried. See, that was good. Correct. No, I tried to keep it good.
Yeah, no, I could talk about this stuff for hours, man. But you really, I mean, you know, it's like a give and take, like you said, man. You really
and
covered
and
it.
Every bar in Asbury is a little bit different with their stuff. You know what I mean? Everyone has every bar anywhere in the country has their own different policies, and every promoter is going to be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's, as young bands, you just got to go in. Sometimes you have to deal with that bullshit, you know, to get to the next step, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of part of paying your dues and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, and you know, yeah, I think it's, you gotta make mistakes and learn. You know, you just gotta go out and play and try to do the best you can and, you know, get on as many gigs as you can in general.
Yeah, would you do, I mean, you know, you're telling me you got all, you know, all these gigs lined up, you know, you're having, you know, 4 shows in a weekend, you know, just, you know, an acoustic and a benefit and opening for Bon Jovi. And
it's good.
You know, it's great, man.
It keeps me busy, keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah. real quick, I wanted to ask you, you know, I always like to ask the bands that come in here, any advice you have to, like, up-and-coming bands or even someone just, like, starting out on instrument, wants to go play at a coffee house, anything like that? I know you teach and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But any advice coming from Bobby Mahoney himself over here?
Yeah, just get out and play that coffee house. Like, go do that and go play as many coffee houses as you can find and do that until people like you and you can get good at it, and then go play a bar and go play as many bars as you can find. And it's really, it's my mom always said to me when I was young, you have to make your own luck. You know, you have to go out and make your own opportunities, because no one's gonna come knocking on the door, you know, here's a record deal. You know, the shit that happens in the movies doesn't happen like that. You have to go out and be seen and get your songs out there and play and be horrible, be bad in front of people. Like, I was really, it took a lot of time for me to get to the point where I could really perform to any degree, and, you know, you gotta get better at singing, and the only better way to get better at singing is to do it in front of people. Gotta get better at guitar, do it in front of people, write songs, write bad songs, play them in front of people, because that's the way you're gonna get better. You're gonna learn, oh, that didn't really work, but if I change it to do this, it might work. You know, it's all just doing it as much as possible. And yeah, just not letting anyone tell you you can't do it, and just do it. And like, no one's gonna hand it to you. So that's really the best advice I can say is,
that's perfect. And you know what, you definitely like lead by example in that way. You know, I see you. I mean, like we said, you put in all these shows. You're constantly putting out new music. You're putting in work, man. You know, like I said, this morning you were just playing at, you know, at Sunset, so down in Belmar here. You're like, oh, I'll come do the interview too. And I'm just like, oh, I hope I'm not taking too much of your time.
No,
but
it's all
this
good.
This is like a normal weekend for you, man.
Yeah,
you were just
this is nice.
Putting
nice
in
drive
work.
Down the shore early today. It was good to play a little bit and come hang out for a little bit. No, it's all good. It's part of it. And I love it, you know, and I'm trying to do more of it. So, but it all does come down, just do it, just go play. And that's what I try to tell people, and people ask me, like, you know, how can I get gigs in Asbury Park and stuff like that? Just go play, go to shows, go meet musicians, go, you know, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're not doing it right, you know, stuff like that. Go hang out with people that are better than you. Go jam with people that are better than you, you know. And like I said, when I was younger, hanging out with Willie Nile and those guys, and I being a guitar tech and, you know, opening act, and like, just you got to be out doing things.
Yeah, you know what? I wasn't going to ask you this just because you seem so open-minded and really just interested just talking to you, man. Really inspiring, too. Thank you. Good stuff.
I appreciate it.
I'll ask you this, man. You know, we had a podcast before. We were talking about just with a lot of the other bands, like egos and stuff like that. Yeah. How it could be a good thing. You know, we were saying egos, not egos. But just real quick, man, you seem like very open-minded. You don't seem to have like a big over-the-top ego like a lot of bands do. You know, yeah. People think they play an instrument and they are, you know, Slash, you know, like.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. What do you think about like ego and having an ego and stuff like that?
I mean,
you don't seem that way to me.
No, like, I try. I mean, there's probably other people who would disagree with you.
Yeah,
but it's a balance, and I think, you know, to go back to Springsteen, but I think he did a talk, one of the South by Southwest a couple years ago. It's a really great speech. Like, he does this whole hour long thing. I've never actually watched the whole speech, but there's a couple bits of it that are really good, and he has this one thing where he's like, you have to think you're the baddest ass ever, but you also have to think that you suck.
Right, huh.
You know, and yeah. You have to have ironclad confidence while also having doubt, you know, and it's a bit of duality, you know.
Wow.
And you have to, like, on stage, like, in, like, the Prudential Center, like, I was feeling relatively confident. I'm like, this is what we do. Here's our thing. Like, we play these songs a million times, you know. We entertain people, you know, put us in front of a crowd, and I get excited and have fun, and then if I'm doing that, it seems people enjoy that. But at the same time, I've seen people when they think that, they think, being, like you said, they're Slash, think being a musician makes them better than people automatically.
Yeah, right.
It's like, no, like, that's a farce, because even the people who we think are not people, like the big mega stars, are just people.
Yeah. And they're talking about dogs going into the yards.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like,
everyone, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like,
regular people.
Everyone has their shit, and everyone has stuff that they're dealing with. And it's like, yeah, we're all on the same level. So, like, it's like, yeah, I don't understand really when musicians kind of get too big for their britches.
Yeah.
Like, and like people who, like, can't, like, won't talk to people after shows, or, like, won't talk to their fans and stuff like that. It's like, you wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them, or,
yeah,
you know. And so there's no reason to get snotty with them, you know, and stuff like that, but, or even treating other musicians and poorly. Like, you were literally, everyone was in the lower tier position at some point, you know what I mean? So that's why you gotta give other bands, you know, chances to play. You gotta, you know, help out other younger bands rather than being snotty or being, you know, too good, you know, or, you know. Yeah, it definitely is a balance, and it's a difficult thing, because having watched, you know, something like someone like Bon Jovi, for example, who's come from, you know, the nothing to great, you know, he's gone all the way up to the top. It's got to be really hard to stay humble when you have 20,000 people every day telling you how wonderful you are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or, like, you know, I could see how being sucked into that lifestyle for 40 years could totally, like, screw with that.
I
you
get
know?
You, yeah, yeah.
So, like, even in that, like, people who I've met who haven't been as nice as they were, or, like, you know, other famous people where it's like, oh, what, you know, what's up their ass? It's like, you know, you could see how over time just the machine of being on the road and being in this kind of fucks with your compass.
Yeah, to some degree. I get that, yeah.
Because when you're conditioned to think, oh, you know, I deserve everything my way, and when I don't get my way,
people cater to you.
And it's, you know, it's bullshit, because then you see if it's, then there's always the, just on the climb, there's always the downfall, you know, there's always the decline, and the people you were a jerk to on the way up are going to remember that when you're when you're the one who needs help and you're the one who's going down, you know. So, you know, just be nice to people. And that's kind of a try to treat everyone nice until they give me a reason not to.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Really good stuff, man. And really, I'm enjoying this interview
good,
so
I'm
much.
Glad.
A lot of times,
me too.
A lot of people are very me-centric in the music world, and I feel like you're so open-minded, and you're always looking at things from both sides of the equation. With the angle.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell that's how your mind works, man. Yeah. That's good. That's a, like, very refreshing.
I appreciate
very refreshing.
That. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, but it's a, it is a bit of a mix, because it's like, at the same time, though, it has to all sort of be, it has, you have to think about yourself. You have to put yourself first, because in some situations, because you're going to be your biggest fan. You know, no one else is going to be the one who's going to, you know, champion you, you know, until, unless you are. That was another thing I learned early on. I was playing, in college, I was playing a song, it was Another Deadbeat Summer, which became one of our regular studio song, or one of our big live songs, and I was playing it when I had just written it for someone. And before I started, they were like, is this song better than Born to Run? And I was like, no. Like, fuck no. Why would it be? And they're like, then why the fuck would I listen to it? They're like, you have to tell me this is the best thing ever.
Interesting. Okay.
And I was like, that's a little much, but I was like, I understand what he's going for. You know, he's like
trying to light a fire on
kind
you?
Kind of, yeah. He's like, you know, he's like, if I'm, you know.
Or just if, being if, rude, if, I don't know.
Well, it was a little bit of both, but, he was like, but it was just like, if you're not going to be the one to tell me that I should listen to it and that it's great, why would anyone else? You know, so, you know, I tried to be less depreciative in my humor when it comes to things like that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's true. It's like, if I'm sitting here saying, oh, yeah, you know, this, yeah, we suck. Yeah, you know, no one's going to be like, oh, okay. People will be like, yeah, you know, I guess so. You know, but you have to find a fine line between being confident and trying to put yourself first while also, I think there is a way, there are ways to do both and bring yourself up and bring other people up with you.
Yeah, you seem to be on top of that.
I try, you know, because I've been in the other side of it. I'm still on the other side of it. It's all about perspective, you know, a lot of the stuff.
Yeah. But, no, really good. Know,
absolutely.
That's awesome. And real quick, you know, since we're talking about other people and stuff like that, man, any shouts you want to give real quick to the band, you know, plug the show, anything like that real quick before we listen to the last song? Go ahead.
Shout outs to, you know, my band, James, Andrew, and John. You know, they're great. And we got the Burns and Tuavera, Mac, and Tommy London playing with us on Thursday, and it's going to be a blast. You know, I can't wait. I'm excited to see all the other bands, and we haven't played full band in about a month now, so I'm, like, crawling up the walls. Yeah. I'm itching. I'm ready to go.
I got you. Yeah, man, so. I don't like sitting on the sidelines with my drumsticks, you know, everyone's doing an acoustic, man, you know.
Absolutely.
But that's awesome. But June 14th, House of Independence, be there. Going to kick off the summer with Bobby Mahoney and the Seven Sons, some other great bands. It's going to be awesome. Real quick, and Bobby, fantastic interview, man. This is great talking to you.
Thanks
you
for know, having me.
It's,
I appreciate
it. Really, really good stuff, man. I got a lot of quotable stuff already. It's going to be great. Talk to me a little bit about Called It Quits real quick. Now, I always say I'm terrible about, you know, deciphering songs and stuff like that. Insert drummer joke here. I'm trying to think of the line that you had said. I wrote it down real quick. Sorry about bringing you down, stuff like that. What is this song about, or is it to someone? Or
well, originally the song, I had like the sort of the main riff of the song was like on an acoustic track that I did a couple of years ago, which is also called the Quits. But it was sort of like just me sort of lamenting about kind of just about being at a party I didn't want to be at. It was kind of it was the initial premise for it. And that's really kind of still where the verses are out of the song. But then, part of it's also like it's a bit of a breakup song. It's a bit breakup.
That's kind
of
what I got.
But it's breakup, but it's also it doesn't have to be necessarily like romantic relationships. It's kind of have to be like even friendships. It's just kind of like you get to a point where knowing someone or having a connection with someone isn't like it's either not healthy or it's not, you know, beneficial for either or one of you or both of you. So it's just like, you know, it's better just to cut the cord sometimes, you know. That's kind of what it's about in a general sense. But it's also sort of about realizing that, but then also sort of seeing, like, the silver lining and the positivity of what's next in that, too, you know. So it's like called the quits, but it's like, okay, you know, that door is shutting, but the next thing's kind of just waiting to start, sort of.
And it's a great track. Obviously, you guys can find the video, you know, follow Bobby Mahoney on YouTube. Yeah. You guys got some good, like, kind of, you know, live shot videos, like, with the track. It's really cool. They came
out
great.
Yeah, no, this guy, Zach Morrison's been doing videos for us for the last 3 or 4 years now.
Looks
and
good.
He's awesome. Yeah, he's very talented. And, I love the way the new videos came out. You know,
it's awesome. And there's a bunch of them on YouTube. Guys, check them out. Obviously, on Facebook, social media. You guys know the drill by now. Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son. Bobby, pleasure. Absolute pleasure
talking
to you.
Thank you for having me. Let me know when you guys are doing another Star Wars panel. And,
you're in? We will. Yeah. Oh, man, dude. I can talk about Star Wars all day.
Yeah, thank you, though. I appreciate you having me.
Hey, man, thanks for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Mahoney. And, of course, let's take a listen to Called It Quits.
Quits on a night like this. It was so soft for letting done. Usually quiet, I took a step or two back from the wreck. Hard to believe there's anything left. Sorry about dragging you down. Hope the depths of hell spit you out. Sorry about dragging you down. Hope the depths of hell spit you out.
I called Hey guys, thanks for checking out this episode of the Bob Culture Podcast. Don't forget to support the show on patreon.com/Bob Culture Podcast for some great incentives. I'd like to give a shout out to my patrons, Jay Crow, Shannon Cruz, and of course, Mike and Michelle Vermillion from Sledgepad Innovations. Sledgepad is the bass drum dampening system used by national acts like Pink, Goo Goo Dolls, Cher, Collective Soul, and a whole bunch more. Check them out at sledgepad.com. And of course, if you're a fan of the show, please subscribe on YouTube, check us out at podbean.com, and leave me a review at iTunes.